We are now switching to Rolando, who is going to speak on the economics and geometry of a Christian social calendar.
The kind of motivation of this is kind of building on work that I've done previously and continue to do for many years. And that's thinking of how you can kind of look at economics almost in a scientific way, at least I think, and also in a more religious way. And so this is kind of like the crowning piece of a theory I'm trying to develop, which is using geometry to look at economics. And it's kind of like, yeah, thinking about things like space and time, and obviously that's to do with the calendar. If I get into it, one of the things is about it, that kind of cropped up is, or I think about when I come here is as a Christian. A lot of the time I'm talking about the Sabbath, and I will do again, and that's in the Ten Commandments, which is kind of biblical, but not necessarily Christian. However, I should be looking here. I guess I'm not sure where
people
can't see me. That's fine. I part of my kind of challenge, or some kind of what motivates me, or think in terms of thinking about Sabbath, is as someone who's part of a church that keeps a Sabbath, when I'm talking to not Christians who don't, like I've kind of thought like what is the justification for that? And that's partly motivated me looking deeper at the concept of Sabbath to actually try to bring about that link. Now, the link to kind of the Christianity here is, it could be seen as a bit tenuous, but I can see it. Anyway, so I'll be talking about how you can basically apply basic maths. There's a bit of a tenuous jump in there, but basic maths to kind of build up our experience of time, or demonstrate how we can basically have a social analog to our calendar that seems to rationalize things from my point of view. So I'll just get into it. It's not a really long presentation, but hopefully it'll be interesting. So that's just in the way a little bit. So the purpose is to kind of explain our human experience of time from a social perspective. It's going to be based on Christian or biblical principles. So it's kind of a different approach to economics. It's not really based on utilitarianism. I'm kind of basing it on the concept of symmetry. And in particular, the concept of debt. And I'll kind of go into this as I go deep into the slides. But one thing that I try to look at a lot is the symmetry in terms of buying and selling, lending and borrowing. It's quite interesting when Scotland, talk about Adam Smith, talk about sculpture. The way I kind of see things is I'm trying to add half of the puzzle to the picture. So as I mentioned earlier, I see that the commandment of thou shalt not steal and shouldn't steal as the linchpin of the market economy. But what I've observed over the years is that the Bible talks a lot about debt in particular. And so that's what I want to look at. Also, I want to kind of explain some sense what certain big numbers are in the Bible, like might represent. So like number 7, number 12, sort of thing. And I'm going to have a geometrical explanation of why I think they're really significant. So it's kind of, why do we have a 7-day week, and how does that link to our experience of time? Okay. First, I just kind of build a picture up, so you kind of have a bit of background, and then I'll go to the kind of result, which is kind of basic maths, but I think it's potentially very insightful. So every major religion generally has its own calendar. People might know more about the calendar than me. I'm not an expert in it, but I have some understanding. Sometimes there's more than one calendar that can be used simultaneously, one for religious purposes and others for secular uses. So we kind of Christian countries such as ours, or at least historically, they use a Gregorian calendar for secular purposes, but some use different calendars in terms of fixing the date of Easter. So the reason I just wanted to bring this out is that although we have a sense that we have a calendar, it's not necessarily a fixed concept, and that's quite important. So what I'm going to propose is going to be like, on first sight, be like, what are you talking about? But when you just, appreciate that calendar is a bit of a fluid thing, there's not one way to do it, things become, makes a bit more sense in terms of what I'm trying to do. Because for one, in this calendar I'm building, it has 13 months, and that's going to seem a bit odd. But when you kind of get the bit of background, it makes a bit more sense. So I can't see that bit at the top. But I can't really, don't know how to. Anyway, so what celestial elements of calendar? So by creating the sun and the moon, God established three basic units of time: the day, the month, and the year. So that's what I'm talking about in terms of our experience of time. We experience days, months, years. And they're related to these celestial bodies that move around. And that was kind of the basis of what classical physicists are often looked at. So when you talk about Adam Smith, he was almost like what he built was almost like a social bearing on what Newton was doing to some extent. And so I'm kind of taking that tradition into account. So I'm thinking about that as well. I'm thinking of kind of merging the science and the religion. I'm thinking about a traditional aspect of science, thinking about these celestial bodies moving through the sky. So in terms of the day, that's determined by our perceived motion of the sun, or its motion of the sun and its cycle, it's rising and setting on a day-to-day basis, determines the day. Days are shorter in the winter and become longer in the summer, so that's when you kind of get seasons and wonderful cycle through these short and long days gives us a year. And the monthly cycle of the moon is cyclical, as you see it kind of first appearing, coming to full moon and shrinking again. So you've got these different cycles going on. In terms of how we experience time, the solar year is approximately 365 and a quarter days. The moon cycle is about 29 and a half days long. And the month is actually defined by, for instance, the cycle of the moon. The year is the cycle through the full length of these seasons. But these are independent of each other, and that's quite important. So that might seem to be very economic-y, but we'll get there. So 7 is approximately the number of the days of one phase of the moon. That's a bit interesting. But there's challenges around different cultures keeping in step keeping calendar in step with the seasons, especially if you've got a lunar year. So in Islam, they, for instance, their holidays vary throughout the year because they've got a lunar calendar. And so that makes things out of sync. So one solution is sometimes they do something called intercalation where they add a 13th month. So that all this is just to say, if not the weirdest thing that you could do. So I spent quite a bit of time working in the Department of Transport. And one thing that came to,
this is why we're
trying to
stay
about that. Yeah, exactly. We're thinking about all this stuff.
Yeah, is that rail or rail?
No, rail, as in trains.
Yeah.
So basically, I'm not an expert on this, but I would review loads of studies on like different stuff like that. Sort of reviewing stuff. So because I have these chunky documents, I wouldn't necessarily go into detail. But I was thinking of this stuff in the back of my mind, and then it occurred to me, I was like, what is a rail period? I think there's different terms of like rail period, but this is one usage. And I was like, oh, let me just look this up for once, because it's annoying me, I didn't know what it was. And basically, all it is like a four-week period. So they split so if I ask you how long is a month, you might say, oh, 4 weeks. I mean, some of you might say that. So it's basically saying, instead of saying January, February, they'll have these 4 week period, and that's how they'll manage the rail system. And you have 13 of these four-month periods, 264 days, and you have this kind of one-day spare. So that was like, oh, right, they do that because it's a way to structure this social thing we have where we're managing the railway over a year. So that's the kind of thing I'm thinking about, just like why you might have a social, like an analogue to the calendar. So this is, they have their own sort of calendar. And there's actually official calendar, I don't know, that is based on the same kind of space, similar principles. In my church, the Seventh-day Adventist church, actually, we have a thing where every 13th Sabbath is a day for children, special day for kids, and they'll do their memory verse and stuff. Growing up, I thought that's a bit weird. It's like, 1300 seems to be like a biblical number. Why are we doing something? But it's just a way to split up the year. The lessons go every quarter, and you've got four. You know, you have these 4 weeks, 13, and that, you know, that's a way to split up the year. So, so why might you want to do that?
365. So we have kind of had 365 days a year, 360 or like a leap year,
but 364 facts is quite well. So any particular number stand out of the factors of 34?
Seven.
Yeah, that's the key. That is the key thing. So one reason why you might want to have a 364 day year is because it factors well with the number seven, which is the days of the week. So yeah, that's kind of, I mentioned that August Conti's calendar has 13 months, 28 days and 4 weeks. So there's a calendar that does what I'm going to do. But in general, 13 is a bit inconvenient number. It's like, what does that, why does that matter? Interesting, there's something in the Book of Enoch. I'm not someone to be too controversial, as you say. I stick to the general canon, but I did get into the Book of Enoch at one point, so I just wanted to iterate it. And it really strongly advocates for 364 day year, as does the Book of Jubilees. It's like a really big, it's not that, it's not canon, but if you read the book, it's like the actual year, 364 days. And I'm not saying that because I'm trying to tell people that that's how you should believe. It's just interesting that these couple sideline books do emphasize this. And I mentioned the realm periods. So the Sabbath gives us a fourth unit of time, the week. It was talked about rest. Now, in my, so we've got this 7 day week coming from the Sabbath day creation. There is literature that says it's kind of come from Babylonian scripture. Babylonian experience. But I don't believe that, obviously. But the idea of a 7 day week with a day of rest definitely doesn't come from the Bible. Now, now I'll get into the economics of it. What I presented years ago, I presented something on this, and I've got a paper on our discussion papers that looked into this. What I feel like there is in the Bible is a sort of inbuilt macroeconomic system, insofar as you've got this command that says work 6 days, rest one, and then you've got the commandment, like a law in the Book of Deuteronomy, chapter 15, that says every 7 years you have debts, 7 years you stop. And I put this together and say you've got a relationship between buying and selling, you know, and lending and borrowing. So that ratio is 6-7, because every 6-7 years you've worked 6 years, because you've worked 6 days out of seven. There's, you've had this activity of buying and selling for 6 years, and then borrowing is gone for 7 years. A lot of my work is trying to work out how that makes sense mathematically, geometry. I've tried to link that to the geometry of a circle in a couple of different ways. But we're not going to go over that now. It's just that's how I link it to the scripture. Now, when we link it to Christianity, what I find interesting in terms of trying to understand the role of the Sabbath and how it links into Christianity, there are references to Christ playing similar roles as Sabbath in the New Testament, Lord of the Sabbath, or you know, he's our rest, and the Mass is going to kind of show that. To me, it's very profound, but you might think it's like a coincidence. But when I show you the Mass, I think it's quite interesting how it can play out. Okay, so we're getting into the Mass of it, the geometry. There's a debate between Gregory and Newton. Basically, it's how many spheres can you get around a central sphere in the same space, same size? And so the answer is 12. Okay, so why do I think, what's interesting about number 12 jump out to you at all? If I said number 12, what Christian, why is that? And you can tell me what's interesting. 12 tribes of Israel, any other references? 12? 12 disciples, right. So the word for it is, if you actually think about it, Christ didn't actually, he actually was in a group of 13 of them all together, but we do think about 12, yeah. So he's actually part of a group of 13. So 13 isn't necessarily an evil number. Now, one thing about debt, Graeber's got a good book, and this is quite I'm going to kind of link it to it, because I think about symmetry. And I won't go into detail, but here's an interesting quote. Debt is a very specific thing. It arises from very specific situations. It requires a relationship between two people who do not consider each other fundamentally different sorts of being, who are at least potentially equal, but basically they're unequal at the moment. So the idea is that debt is kind of like you lend to someone and they pay it back, and it's kind of intertemporal exchange. But what I kind of focus on and I'm doing, think about in kind of my research for university is kind of intertemporal budget constraints, the idea of symmetry. So you're in debt for a period and you pay that back. And I think that's where I'm thinking about the science of everything. So moving away from the utilitarian framework, when you think about utility functions that you can't observe, in principle, you can think that you can observe, you know, that if I buy or sell and then borrow, you've kind of got this equality happening. So I'm going to look at this space, geometric space, which is established kind of math sort of thing, but I think it applies to the idea of the Sabbath and this ratio of 6-7. So here we are, here are the maps. So these seven circles on the left, this is my conjecture, my idea of like how you can model the week. To which one is the middle, what day is the middle circle? If you have a big one. The Sabbath, right? Because basically you have these 6 days where you have economic activity and you've got nothing in the middle. Why does that lend itself to economic activity? In the broad sense, it's a very symmetric shape. In like chemistry or in geometry generally. If you think of bees, panning, or I think bees, or snowflakes, you have this hexagonal lattice thing going on. Mm-hmm. So these six, if you had a node in the middle of each, you've got twofold and sixfold symmetry. It's the most symmetry you can get in two dimensional space.
Well, I'm going to bottle in 2 minutes.
2 minutes. All right. Fine. So I will just finish off. So this is the idea of the Hadamard that builds up. So you've got that picture, sorry. And this is the one on the right is you've got 12 spheres around the middle one. So you can see where I'm going, how to build up a year. So you've got one day and it's seven days and I'm going to build up a year. So you take the seven circle packing, and then this is a bit of a leap, but just make it like one big circle representing the week. That's the biggest thing, I would say. And the idea is, I guess you can look at days separately or you can look at week as one big chunk. And I'm saying, just make a big circle that's equivalent to the size of the seven small circles. So every month, each month, you have got 7 times 4, 28 of these, okay? And so you've got those 4 weeks, that kind of fits the days of the months. But what's really interesting, and I think I would have known this before, but I found it again recently, is you get 4 circles fit onto the piston spit. So every month, you get like 4 circles that fit. Every week, so every month, you basically get 4 of these circles that are size 7. They fit perfectly onto the base of the spit of the same radius. And then you get 13 of those each year that fit perfectly on top of a middle sphere. So in that sense, you can think of the time packing itself together neatly and in a way that kind of coordinates economic activity in terms of debt, buying and selling, lending and borrowing. And then what's interesting is price was that centrepiece of the 12 or the 13 of them, like that central sphere. You can think of price being that. It's very similar to the idea that central circle. So that's basically my idea of how you could think of a geometric representation of economics that kind of is in line with the Bible.
Thanks very much, Roy.